What if there was one thing that you could change to increase your motivation, improve your learning ability, make you more open to trying new things, and give you all around better performance in all areas of your life? Sounds too good to be true? Well, that's exactly what psychologist Albert Bandura theorized would happen if you improved what he called self-efficacy. Self-efficacy affects your motivation, your capacity to learn and try new things, and your overall performance. Basically, it's everything we care about when it comes to creating positive change in your life. But is self-efficacy something you're born with, or is it something that you can train and grow? Today, I'm going to discuss not only the importance of self-efficacy, but also how you can build it into your life to make creating the change you're after that much easier. This is Change Made Easy. Change is hard. We make it easy. My name is Paul Levitin, and I am a certified behavior change specialist and coach, and I've been working in the field of behavior change for over a decade. My goal is to help you understand the science and master the art of change. Because when change is easy, improving your health, wealth, relationships, and leading a happy, fulfilling life is automatic. When it comes to creating positive change in your life, it all starts with a belief. A lot of change stops before it even starts when you think, I can't do this. It's natural to doubt yourself at times, but that doubt is often what holds you back. So be sure to listen and take notes when I get to the four keys of building self-efficacy so you can put them to use immediately. Self-efficacy is defined as an individual's belief in their capacity to act in the ways necessary to reach specific goals. Basically, self-efficacy is another way to say self-belief. Do you believe that you're capable? Period. Do you believe that you're capable of success, of winning, of achieving, of whatever it is that you're setting out for? Do you believe you're capable of creating the change that you're after? And do you believe that you're capable of keeping it? As I mentioned in the intro, this concept was originally proposed by psychologist Albert Bandura, who's most well known for his social learning theory. And as Bandura explained, self-efficacy affects every area of human endeavor. A person's level of self-efficacy determines the beliefs that person holds regarding their power to affect situations. That means self-efficacy strongly influences both the power a person actually has to face challenges competently and the choices a person is most likely to make in challenging situations. A strong sense of self-efficacy promotes human accomplishment and personal well-being. A person with high self-efficacy views challenges as things that are supposed to be mastered rather than threats to avoid. It's very similar to the growth mindset I spoke about recently in the episode titled Build Your Resilience, the Marshmallow Experiment, which I've linked to in the show notes. If you haven't listened to that one yet, go click that link and add it to your queue right now. So people with high self-efficacy are able to recover from failure faster and are more likely to attribute failure to a lack of effort rather than some character flaw that's outside of their control. So people with high self-efficacy approach high stress, potentially threatening situations with the belief that they can control them or at least have some say over the outcome. And that feeling of control has been linked to lower levels of stress and lower vulnerability to depression. People with a low sense of self-efficacy, on the other hand, are more likely to view difficult tasks as personal threats and shy away from them. Difficult tasks lead them to look at the skills they lack rather than the ones they have. And this is, again, very in alignment with Carol Dweck's work on fixed mindset. For someone with low self-efficacy, it's easy for them to lose faith in their own abilities after a failure. And that can be linked to higher levels of stress and depression because people who lack self-efficacy get trapped in the thought loop of, well, I can't change it, so why should I even try? So low self-efficacy and a fixed mindset both lend themselves to what a lot of people today would call the quote-unquote victim mentality. People throw pop shots at people who have a quote-unquote victim mentality, and I think it's important to understand that it's different from someone who actually is a victim. some people are victimized, and that's a tragedy. And that's something that we have to do our best as a society to save people from. But the victim mentality, on the other hand, is really just a more divisive way of saying a lack of self-efficacy. Because someone who lacks self-efficacy feels like life is happening to them. Like they have no say, no sway in their life. They feel like they have no power. They feel like they're being forced around, either by people or the government, the powers that be, the universe, life itself. So what is that if not being a victim of life? And someone who feels like a victim will quickly give up. And they'll find it much harder, if not downright impossible, to create positive life change. So when it comes to your quest for change, a crucial first step is building self-efficacy so that you don't ever have to allow yourself to fall into that victim thinking or feel like you're incapable of creating the change that you're after. Your level of self-efficacy around a given task directly dictates if you are going to achieve that result, because it decides if you're even going to start, how hard you try, and how you deal with the adversity and setbacks that inherently come from a change. Hey, real quick, we'll be back to the show in just a few seconds, but right now I have to ask you for a huge favor. If you're getting value out of this episode so far, take 2 seconds and share it with a friend. I mean, right now, literally, hit the little share button and send it in a text to your roommate or your cousin or your mom or your brother or your sister. Seriously, spread the love. If you like what you're hearing, then that's the best way that you can show support for this show. Because maybe you're like Eliza Kay, who said, "This podcast is both warm and inviting, but real enough to push and motivate me." Or you're like Dalton, who said, "Paul is an amazing host, and his podcast is a must listen." Don't you want to share this awesomeness with your friends and family? Don't be a gatekeeper. It only takes a second. It helps me grow and reach a new audience, and you seem like a genius friend who recommends new, awesome podcasts. We all win. All right, go send that text, and now let's get back to the show. If you don't believe you can do something, you won't. It really is that simple. And this isn't just me being like, well, just believe and you can achieve. This isn't just motivational nonsense. It's science. This is how your brain works. Your brain is constantly scanning the horizon, looking out for 2 things. It wants to save energy and survive. I mean, and really those are the same thing, because saving energy we want to do because it keeps you alive. So things that keep you alive and save energy feel safe. They're easy. They exist inside of your comfort zone. That's the status quo. That's your capacities right now in this moment. And everything you want to achieve is the opposite. It's hard. It's outside of your comfort zone. It goes against the status quo and against your current capacities. So basically, to your survival brain, it's its worst nightmare. And this is why people stay stuck. Fortunately, evolution has a solution for this mechanism, because if it hadn't figured this out, none of us would be here by now. So we are all equipped with a deep desire for safety and security. And the reason that we still strive for more and still want things is because we also have a mechanism built in for striving. So we are meant to want more. We are meant to want to learn, to grow, to achieve, to succeed. And these 2 things, the need to stay the same and stay safe, and the need to grow and achieve, are constantly at odds. So the question is, which one wins? And it depends on a lot of factors. Your environment, your upbringing, your current capacities, how much stress you have, what you've done in the past, what you're looking for in the future. Again, a lot of things. But one of the biggest factors that decides whether you are the person who stays in the safe status quo or the person who goes after more is, maybe you guessed it, your level of self-efficacy. Because someone with high self-efficacy is more likely to be a striver, a go-getter, a risk-taker. And someone with low self-efficacy is more likely to be a comfort seeker, someone who always wants to stay safe and accept what they have rather than going out and getting more. And it makes sense, because again, this is all about keeping you safe, and your safety brain is always going to call the shots. So I just said your safety brain is going against your striving brain, but if they come to a head, your safety brain is going to win because safety is the most important thing. So when you have high self-efficacy, what it tells your safety brain is, it's okay. This is a risk, but it's a risk worth taking because I believe in myself and that I'm going to achieve something worthwhile from taking this risk. But if you don't believe in your capacity to succeed, your safety brain, if you're a low self-efficacy person, is going to go, well, this isn't worth the risk. I can't be wasting my valuable energy, so I'm not even going to try. And realize this doesn't actually mean anything about your chances of success. Someone with low self-efficacy could really have a great chance of succeeding at winning, at crushing that project or the goal or the big speech or whatever it is. But the very fact that you have low self-efficacy, that you didn't believe that you could do the thing, is what stops you from even trying or taking the chance. As Wayne Gretzky, or maybe Michael Scott once said, you miss 100% of the shots that you don't take. So we see that having a low level of self-efficacy is unideal. It's clearly something that we want more of. Having high self-efficacy is better. But is this a fixed trait? Is it something that you're born with? And are some people just born with more of it and some born with less? Well, Albert Bandura says no. And lucky for you, he also gave us a 4-step roadmap for cultivating and building more self-efficacy, no matter what level you're at currently. So according to Bandura, there are 4 key places that lead to feelings of self-efficacy. And these are things that, again, some people experience more naturally and some people less naturally, but it doesn't matter because you can still train it. No matter where you are on that spectrum, you can build it up once you know what to look for. So the 4 keys to building self-efficacy, according to Albert Bandura, are mastery experience, vicarious learning, social persuasion, and physiology. And don't worry if you didn't write those down. I'm going to go through each one and explain what it is and explain how you can use it to build your own self-efficacy muscle. So the first, and according to Bandura, most effective route to enhance self-efficacy is what he called a mastery experience. Mastery experience is exactly what it sounds like, becoming a master at something. Put simply, it's a personal experience of success. If you achieve something difficult, especially in the face of adversity, it helps you build confidence and strengthen perseverance in future challenging things. You do something hard in one area of life, it leaks out into the others. Simple. You're literally training your brain that it's okay to do hard things. I was just talking about your survival brain. So when you do something hard and you master it, you succeed, your survival brain is learning that it will be okay. You will survive. You will be rewarded at the tail end of your hard work. And understand here, mastery does not mean you have to be a literal world champion or master. It just means you have to work towards self-mastery in some areas. I remember when I first started lifting weights, my friend Shane was deadlifting 3 plates, which is 315 pounds or about 140 kilos for any non-Americans, which at the time was a wild amount of weight for me. I mean, I was a skinny string bean guy. I was just getting started in the gym. I could barely lift the bar. So one day Shane was lifting 315 and I jokingly walked up to the deadlift platform and pretended to lift it. But I pulled the bar as hard as I could and it did not even move. Like it did not budge. It did not shake. It was like I was pulling something that was cemented to the floor. It felt like I was trying to pull an oak tree out of the ground with my bare hands, or like I was King Arthur trying to take Excalibur from the stone. I mean, it was literally impossible. And if you ask me in that moment if I would ever be able to lift that amount of weight, my self-efficacy was really low. I would have said, no, it's impossible, because I did not think it was physically impossible for that weight to even move, like shake, let alone get lifted. But then fast forward a few years, I got into working out. I became a personal trainer. I learned good form. I started light. I worked my way up and blah, 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 blah. All of a sudden, again, 3-4 years later, I lifted that 315 pounds. And then I did it for reps. And then I passed it, and that was part of my warm-up. So what signal do you think that sent to my subconscious mind, to my safety-seeking brain? That thing that was literally impossible, a weight that could not even budge, that thought it was attached to the ground, was now a part of my normal workout as a part of my warm-up a few times a week. So what does that tell my level of self-efficacy to take something that was literally impossible and not only make it possible, but to see that it could become easy? That is mastery at work. And just to be clear, I'm not an elite lifter or anything by any stretch. I was not a master in the sense that I could go to a competition or win some type of title or awards, but I mastered that weight to me. I took something that couldn't be done and I made it possible. And if I could do that, then what else could I do? And that unlocked a higher level of self-efficacy. So the next route to self-efficacy is vicarious learning. Vicarious learning is seeing someone else similar to you succeed. So if you're 40 years old and you see LeBron James dunk a basketball, when he's pushing 40, you go, well, yeah, but that's LeBron James. But now imagine your coworker, Larry. And on his 40th birthday, he shows you a video of him slamming dunking in the local gym. And you might think like, what the hell? But you also might think, well, I guess if Larry can do it, you know, why the hell can't I? And this is so powerful because you're literally borrowing self-efficacy from someone else. And this goes hand in hand with that saying you hear all the time, you're the sum of the people you spend the most time with. So it's great to have mentors or people that you look up to, but the real secret sauce is having people within your own peer group who hold similar social status, similar abilities and beliefs, similar demographics, who are pushing forward and forging a better life. So you might have a mentor or a mentor from afar, someone you follow on social media, a podcast you listen to, and you see them achieving these crazy things, and that makes you understand that it's possible, which is great. But when you watch a friend or a coworker or a teammate and they get better and they rise to new heights, that doesn't just tell you that it's possible. It tells you this is possible for people like me. And that is the big difference. So the third step and the route to self-efficacy is social persuasion. And social persuasion is literally direct encouragement or discouragement from another person. The support from a parent, a teacher, a spouse, partner, friend, even a stranger. That's why people line up for 27 miles along the marathons in Boston, New York, London, and they cheer people on. It's motivation. It fuels the fire to keep them going when they're on the brink of giving up. But again, this is positive and negative. Positive encouragement can be the difference between someone doing and not doing. And similarly, negative discouragement can be the thing that makes them think, why even bother? I mean, how many artists are there in the world who we will never see because a parent or a teacher threw some offhanded negative remark at them at a young age, and they internalized that to mean that they couldn't be an artist, so they stopped trying. So again, this goes hand in hand with vicarious learning because both of these point to the importance that other people have in our lives and in our own self-efficacy. Even though it is self-efficacy, it is built through society and our interaction with others. And the final of the four levers that you can pull to build your self-efficacy is understanding your physiology. So self-efficacy is a mental phenomenon, but there are physical aspects to it. So when it comes to growth, growth is stimulated by stress. Stress in this scenario is not good or bad. There are positive and negative forms of stress. I've done entire episodes of this in the past, so scroll back to episode 169 titled Stress, Where It Comes From, and Why It's the Best Thing to Happen to You, so you can understand more about stress. I've linked for it in the show notes. You can go in a deep dive into stress and how to think about it in the body. But the cliff notes are that stress creates what we know as the stress response. These are familiar signs: your heart racing, sweating, rumbling in the stomach, raised levels of awareness, nausea, spasms, maybe even pain. That's what people consider fight or flight. That's what happens in a stressful situation. You might feel like that before giving a big pitch at work or asking a person out that you've been crushing on. And you might start to associate those feelings with negative emotions, high stress, unideal situations. But then it becomes this chicken or the egg scenario. So when you're put into a stressful situation and your heart pumps and your hands sweat, and that happens enough times, eventually your heart pumping and your hands sweating become the trigger that tells you, oh, this is a stressful situation, this is bad. But that's not a real correlation, because lots of things make your heart race and your hands sweat that aren't negatives. And some are even good things. You could be on a roller coaster. You could be on a first date that's going really well. You could be exercising. You could have just been told that your partner is having a baby. All of these things would produce the same physiological response: heart racing, hand sweating, maybe even a bit of nausea, but for very different reasons. So now you can take that knowledge and start to reprogram your subconscious towards more self-efficacy. Because a low person on the self-efficacy scale will be stuck in the thought loop of this is bad. But a person with high self-efficacy will be more likely to realize, oh, these are just signs of excitement, not necessarily negative. So if you can start to reframe this in your mind in real time, you can take back control. And when you get those butterflies in your stomach before a big talk, or your heart starts racing as you come towards the front of the line at Starbucks and you haven't decided on what you want to order yet, and there's 20 people waiting behind you, you can literally tell yourself that the physiological response does not mean anything wrong is happening. You don't have to be afraid. You don't have to let this be a negative thing. Just like your heart can beat from excitement while you wait in line for a roller coaster, that can be what's happening when you're waiting for your macchiato, rather than the same old story of, oh my God, everyone's watching me, this is so embarrassing. And since low self-efficacy is linked to lowered perceived ability, when you think you're perceiving it as high stress or bad, it decreases your efficacy even more, as you feel like things are outside of your control, like your body is off on another negative spiral. But if you realize that it's a normal physiological response, one that's not inherently good or bad, it's just par for the course in a lot of different circumstances, there's a lot more likelihood of you maintaining a higher level of perceived control, which means higher self-efficacy. So, to recap, the four keys to increasing your self-efficacy are mastery. Get good at things. Doesn't matter what. Become great at one thing, and that tells your brain that you're someone who's capable of great things in other areas, and that will leak out to other areas. Two is vicarious learning. Surround yourself with people who are doing things that you want to do. People who are on your same social level or in your peer group. It's one thing to look up to people ahead of you, but it can be even more powerful to see the growth of those alongside you. Number three is social persuasion. This is the positive influence of others. And you also have to be mindful of the negative social influences that can negatively affect your self-efficacy as well. So stay away from naysayers. Cultivate your environment, and that includes people you hang out with and the people in your social media feeds. And number four is understand your physiology. By understanding your natural physiological responses, you can go from feeling like this is happening to me and the world is burning to, okay, this isn't so bad and I am in control. And if you believe that you can control your physiology, it unlocks more self-efficacy around everything else. So my action step and my challenge for you this week is to choose one of the four self-efficacy levers discussed here to work on. Do not try to do everything at once, because that's a surefire way to overwhelm yourself and lower your self-efficacy. Just pick one as your focus and work on it for 2 to 4 weeks and see what happens from there. So now you understand how self-efficacy can affect your motivation, your desires, your actions, and more. I think you'd agree with me when I say that it's one of the most important things when it comes to creating positive change in your life. Fortunately, now you understand more about self-efficacy, as well as the four tools you can use to build it into your life. That's change made easy. Before you go, I just have to ask you for a huge favor. If you enjoyed or got value from this episode at all, then take a moment and leave a rating and review in the podcast app that you're listening or watching on. If you like the show and you want me to continue to create more episodes and be able to get awesome guests that will help make changing your life easier, then this is the best way you can show support. You can leave a 5-star review on iTunes like Eliza K, who said, "This podcast is both warm and inviting, but real enough to push and motivate me." Thank you, Eliza. Or you can be like Dalton, who said, "Paul is an amazing host and his podcast is a must listen." Thank you, Dalton. And thank you to all of the over 100 people who have taken the time to rate and review this show 5 stars on iTunes, or the dozens who have left 5-star reviews on Spotify. It only takes a minute, and it helps me grow, it helps me reach a new audience, and it lets me know that this is helping someone, which just feels good. All you have to do is go to the show page of whatever app you're listening to and hit the little 5 stars. Or go to the comments section on YouTube and boom, that's it. And if you really want to show love, take a screenshot when you do it and tag me in your stories on social media at Change Made Easy, and I'll shout you out in an upcoming episode. All right, go leave that rating, and I'll see you back here every Tuesday and Thursday with new episodes of Change Made Easy.